Today's episode of Absurdity is sponsored by The Haystack. The Haystack is a voice for young adults in the Seventh-day Adventist Church that produces articles, music reviews, videos, and more. To check them out, go to www.thehaystack.org. The Haystack, life, culture, theology. Hey, Tony.
Hey.
We have a sponsor now.
It's crazy to me to say that, because in my head we're just like two guys who are like just shouting into the void, but it's like,
I know,
people,
right?
Are actually listening. So it's like the last few episodes I've been like really careful about things I say and things I don't, because like at the beginning I kind of just like threw everything out there, and now I'm like, hey listeners.
See, I don't know, because like if we muzzle ourselves too much, then we
I'm not muzzling. I think I'm just realizing that like it has, like now with Twitter,
people actually listen to
like
this.
With Twitter, like when I first started on Twitter, I was just like, what, like it was my outlet, like I really was just shouting into the void. And to a degree I still do, like if I do a like a personal tweet, like it doesn't get a lot of likes or whatever, but like I realize now I'm like, I have to be really careful, because there are like 450 people, and it's not a big deal. But it's like, there are like 450 people who follow me. I'm like, there are people who like don't agree with my beliefs necessarily, don't see eye to eye on a lot of stuff, that follow me. So if I'm just like tweeting out everything I want, just being like, rah, like it's going to have a real effect in the real world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's like just thinking, being like, okay, the Haystack is listening and they like what we're doing, and our Patreon followers like what we're doing, and our listeners like what we're doing. Okay. No pressure.
Well,
to
make you feel a little bit better, and while this is true, this isn't why we're sponsored. I'm the guy that runs the Haystack Podcast Network.
So
I'm the one that listens to Absurdity and determines.
Dude, never tell them how the hot dog is made. Never tell them how the hot dog.
Well, no, but this is what I'm saying.
No,
like, that's not why I'm
to
sponsored.
Becker behind the curtain.
In fact, it was not even my suggestion. Like, it wasn't even my suggestion to have Absurdity sponsored. It was someone else's on the leadership.
No, team. I agree.
So, like...
Yeah. Like, it wasn't... This is...
you agree nepotism? With the fact that I just presented you.
Yeah. No, I know that. I'm just like... I'm in my head, I'm like, let them have this mystery of, like, they just think we're awesome. Like, this has been in the works for like, ever. And, it is exciting, though. Like, it's really cool. Now we have sponsorship. I think we're going to definitely start investing in getting equipment and really up in this, taking it to the next level. That's exciting.
Well, and what's really important to me with this show is that, I mean, even if we lost all finances, we could still keep it going. And that's what's really important to me, is that while sponsorships help make this easier, we've been running it for 47 episodes with no sponsorship and very little Patreon money, and we've been fine.
And so, the reality is, like, I'm not going to change what I say. Like, if what we say ends up getting us losing sponsors, like, I'd rather be true to what we... You know what I mean?
Well, that, and it's like, I feel like sponsors know what they are getting into when they sponsor
they
us. Like, that's the thing. Like, if you're sponsoring this show, like, that's on you. Like, you should absolutely know what you're in for there.
I feel like I'm going to have the same conversation with my wife after I get married. Like, I'm just going to sit her down and be like, look, you know what you signed up for, okay? Don't get mad at me when I walk around naked and I make jokes. This is what you know. This is what it was.
Well, that's kind of how I feel. It's kind of like, you know, you said for better or for worse when we got married. We never actually said there would be better. We just said if there was better, you'd be sticking around for it too. But we never actually explicitly said that there'd be better. So this is why both of us are single.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, so listeners, look, we're not going to change anything we do with a sponsorship. You'll just hear that blurb at the beginning of every episode. But other than that, things will be... normal.
It's exciting.
Here it is exciting. It's nice to have a little bit of extra finances that we can put towards improving this show. I've poured every dollar that's gone into this show has been out of my own wallet, with the exception of the last several, since we launched Patreon and started getting Patreon. But we don't get that much, honestly. We don't get that much from Patreon, but every little bit helps. Like, I'm not saying it doesn't, like, I'm just saying, like,
what's cool
for the first,
like, now, like, we're going to be investing in better equipment. Like, at some point, it'd be really cool to get like a dedicated a place to hold like all our episodes. Because right now we're just using like an account that you're paying for on Dropbox and stuff. So it'd be like, yeah, let's get a server or something that we can, you know, drop everything in, like an online cloud server or something. Like it's just awesome to be able to do all this to where the point where, yeah, we're not going to make money on this maybe for a while, but it's kind of like it's paying for itself now, you know?
Exactly what it's doing is it's the weight of paying for this and financing this is for the time being off my shoulders, but it's very clear to me that, and I want to make this clear, if we lose all financial backers,
we're still going.
Show continues.
We're still doing this.
Because the equipment that we've already bought, like, is here. I'm not going to lose. It's not going to be, I didn't take a loan out to, or, you know, I'm not using this mic on a subscription basis that if I don't pay for, like, it's already paid for and bought. But we're hoping to improve over time. And the money's not, it's not a whole ton of money. So like you're not going to see any real changes for a while because you got to save up. But it does all go back into this show. So
honestly, I think just getting rid of my old mic was probably the best improvement we've done.
Yep, I agree. And then fixing it so that we weren't listening to your laptop, but actually listening to.
Like, there had to be like two, three
episodes.
I was so
confused. I was so confused. It's okay. I was like, why is this setup sound so tinny and bad? Why. Because it is tinny and bad.
Stupid is, I couldn't even hear the difference because like the input was...
You don't know what this is.
No. It was coming in from the mic. So what I was hearing was my voice in the mic. But what you were actually recording was my voice from the computer. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But now it's all on the same page. It's much so much better. Yeah.
So let's... basically, you know what it kind of feels like? It feels like we planted a church. With over 1,000 downloads per episode now, it feels like we planted a church.
The seeds of our cult
crazy
has,
to me.
Have been planted.
Yeah. don't let some people hear that. but it's crazy that we've created this kind of community. And I'm trying to think of a way. The problem is that those 1,000 people, it's so nebulous. Yeah. And it's really hard to make a community from podcasting because like people listen to this in their car. So anytime you tell them to go do something, it's all dependent on whether or not they remember
when
they get home.
And like everyone honk now or something.
Yeah, like it's a matter of I have to remember.
What's crazy is like some of the other podcasts that have inspired like those type of communities, it's very organic the way they grow up because like they have to recognize each other. Like, and we're going to try to, like, one of the things we're going to do once we get like equipment and stuff is start putting up like t-shirts and various like stickers and stuff like that. And like that's where you really begin to see it is when people start wearing the, I don't want to say paraphernalia because that sounds weird. But the loot,
yeah,
the merch. There we go. That's the word. When people start,
which we already do. If you set up a Patreon right now, like there is merch on.
Oh yeah.
And I'm gonna be adding more soon. I had some suggestions from a friend of mine that I was like, that's a really great idea.
And please do.
I try to stay away from heavy branding because I want shirts that you can wear kind of wherever, and it's not. I'm more simple is better. So you're never going to see a shirt that just says Absurdity Podcast with Ryan Becker or something like that. Like you'll see Absurdity branding, but you won't see podcast or my name, things like that. Like I want it to be something that you can wear
out. Just a picture of my face, really. Like that'd be the best.
Yeah, that's
just put it right over the center or maybe two like over the.
Well, first, Tony, we need a good picture of you and I'm not really sure one exists.
Wow. You know what? This is cool though. Caleb Isley actually did this the other day. I took a picture with my, I have an iPhone X. This is the episode, by the way. This is what we're talking about now. I have an iPhone X, and I took a really, like, they have portrait mode, and I took a really good selfie with it. And Caleb Isley was actually like, oh, dude, that was a really good, photo. And I can't tell you the joy in my heart that I was, like, talking about pride from the last episode. Like, I was like, well, thank you. I mean, it was mostly the camera, pretty much all the camera. But thank you. And it was so cool because it's so rare to have somebody comment. Like, it's like I'm not an Instagram model. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not a very attractive woman. So, like, I'm not out there to get likes.
Hey, there are men that are doing that.
Oh, no,
too.
They are. No, they totally Let's are. Be fair. I don't follow them. But, like, it's so rare for me, like, I'm not doing that for that purpose at all. I'm doing it to be kind of like kooky. And to have someone compliment that was like, oh, that was so cool.
I matter. Look at me mattering right now.
Everyone. Like I showed people, I took a screenshot of and sent it to my family.
I sent it to my parents.
I
exactly.
I really but They don't. They wouldn't care, by the way. My parents would be like, what, that idiot? So that's cool.
Nice. All right. So now that we've spent the first 10 minutes of this episode talking about sponsorships and how beautiful you are. All right,
Becker, make it work.
Let's
segue let's jump into this.
We talk about building a podcast community. So I want to, today we're talking about communities. We're talking about healthy communities, unhealthy communities, what makes a community and what doesn't. And so this makes sense because both of us are coming from a pastoral background and growing up in the church where community is kind of like, if there's a physical product that we sell, that the church sells, it's community, right? Like a transformed life and a relationship with Jesus, that's kind of the spiritual product. Though a transformed life, you know, can be argued both ways, but I would say community is the most immediate, tangible, immediate and tangible product that the church from the sells.
Protestant, yeah, for a Protestant church, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and absolutely.
The Catholic church would argue that they also have like the sacraments, and so it's literally salvation. Yeah. Like literally, we offer you heaven here, eat it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like for us, definitely, like that's the one thing that we offer, and the Catholic Church offers that too. Like that's a big deal. Their traditions and their community is like it's like a really big selling point right now.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too, like that sense of community doesn't leave. Like I've seen, you know, you see atheist churches now and otherwise because people who are ex-Christian or have left the faith, they see community as something that was so valuable and important. And they're like, wait, Christians don't have the monopoly on that. We want to do that. And so they take and that's fair. Like I get that. Community existed before Christianity did, certainly. But the idea with Christianity is you've got community tied in with your spiritual walk and your transformed
and
life.
And a sense of morality, sense of ethos and pathos. So yeah. It ties it in a way that secular ideologies, I believe, can't. Because you look at communism turns into totalitarianism in a blink of an eye. A lot of people want to say like communism is the government of heaven. I'm like, well, no, that's a dictatorship, but it's a benevolent dictatorship because the dictator happens to be, you know, perfect. But yeah, like I think a lot of those secular ideologies are flawed, and the community that is created without a spiritual background tends to fail. Like it's crazy though, because like you like to me, people like the church doesn't have a monopoly on it, but it kind of does. Like again, you call them what? Church of atheists. You know what I mean? Like when people are a sports fan, like they'll tell you like the baseball field, it's a religion. Like they call it, like a cathedral, you know, same for like, you know, people who follow bands, like their concerts are cathedrals, like it's a church. Jon Stewart, you know, the Daily Show ran it for years. He jokingly would say, but in very much all seriousness, he would say the E Street Band, you know, Bruce Springsteen's band, like that's the only church he would ever attend. And like, so in a sense, yeah, like we don't have a monopoly on it, but we kind of do because everyone bases that level of community, that level of closeness off of what the church has.
But I think as far as community is concerned, what makes it a successful community is dependent on the goals of that community. I don't know that there's an objective measure for what makes a community successful. I do think there are measures that objectively make a community healthy or unhealthy, but I don't think that as far as success is concerned, success is determined by the people in it.
Yeah.
To be fair, if you're someone that believes success comes from a different perspective and you see a community being that considers itself successful, we would look out and say, no, that's not a successful community because it's based on X, Y, or Z. But they're like, no, that's exactly why it's successful. Yeah. And that's where it becomes subjective. Yeah. It's almost like communities are morally relativistic. But as far as what makes something healthy or not, I think that's where it becomes objective. And I think that's the way we should be talking about community, not necessarily success or failure, but in terms of health and healthy and unhealthy.
Because I think again, success is very subjective. But if someone walks in and like they want to have a successful diet, You can be like, well, your diet was successful. You lost a lot of weight, but you're dying. So if your objective was to be just to lose weight, yes, you've done that. But I wouldn't say that that's a very healthy diet because you're dying, you know. And that's kind of the same thing. It's like, you know, someone comes in with a huge cough and we can objectively make that cough go away. But if someone wants to come in and be, you know, have success in a health, I want to be healthier. That's very subjective. Like, well, healthy is, you know, it's a spectrum. And so you have to look at a community and be like, is this a healthy community or is this, and for a lot of people that health can be success. I think every community wants to be healthy. But the reality is for some people, that's not the marker that they want for it.
Yeah. So let's just kind of jump in here with community and let's define it. So what community, I guess, as far as the definition is concerned, is a group of people walking through life together in any, or a group of people. Actually, I would actually center it around this, a group of people centered around a common purpose or common reason. So common reason for existing together. So that way we also talk about sports. We talk about other religions. We talk about atheism, whatever. Community is just people centered around a common goal or a common purpose. Does that sound right? Would you change that?
No, I think that's accurate.
Okay, good. Cause I'm right. All right. So then let's,
that was a healthy description.
Thank you. So then what makes a community unhealthy?
And there's so many different markers to that. I think what an unhealthy community is one that does not significantly improve, or it doesn't even have to be significant. I think one that does not improve the lives of the members in it.
Okay. So one that either keeps them the same or
drains.
Or drains them. Yeah.
I think that's an unhealthy community.
That's fair.
And that draining can be like fear, you know, safety, you know, financially draining. It can be emotionally draining. It can be mentally draining. You know, where you actively get dumber. I you know, there are communities that do that. I think one that takes a parasitic community, I think that's an unhealthy one.
Okay, that's fair. I'm definitely willing to go there and accept that. Because to me an unhealthy community, I would also add, let me step back here. I would agree with you, and I would add that it also does not improve the lives of people around it.
Yeah.
Right? So whatever that community impacts is also made worse or stays the same. So that would be that might be an additional thing that I would say.
And even might to say be fair, that might I, even be one of the most important markers. Because you can fake that our lives are getting better within the community, but a really good litmus test is, are you benefiting those around you? I would say that's probably
just condemned
more,
like 80% of our trips.
Yeah, like I would say that's even better. Like that's an even better litmus test for the health of it.
So then what are the identifiers other than, I mean, the definition gives us a couple, but what would you consider kind of the identifier of an unhealthy community?
One that has a lot of fear. I think that's a big one. So, you know, if it's a very fearful community, one with a exorbitant or large amount of competition. To the point that it is tearing, like I said, like it, where it's draining. Competition to the where the
tearing
point where
me apart,
yeah,
Lisa.
Yeah, like that kind of a thing. Like same thing. Like everything. Like every community has fear, and there's a certain amount of healthy fear. But like when it's draining, when that competition becomes draining, so there's competition. I think another unhealthy part of it is where the power balance is out of whack, where a small group of people holds the majority of power. That's an unhealthy community. One that is divided and not united. That's another unhealthy community.
And to be fair, all of these things I think can happen in phases. In other words, I don't think just because it's happening now doesn't mean your community is unhealthy in general. It just means that right now it's something that is a marker of an unhealthy community.
And let me define this. When we talk about these identifiers, having this does not make you an unhealthy community, but unhealthy communities always have this. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So those are those things. Another thing for like what makes an identifier, if you look at a community and say, oh, this is unhealthy, this is not good. Those who cannot help themselves, or those who cannot contribute to the community, are either neglected or viewed as lesser. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's a big marker where, like, if you are not a contributor to it, you are viewed as unusable or trash, or we don't want you. You're not.
Well, and two, I think, and that for me is unhealthy is the any community that is either actively or inactively, indirectly seeking the cause or harm of others is, or seeking to cause harm to others is unhealthy. Definitely. Anything that devalues someone's sense of worth, anything that's looking to destroy them, anything that's looking like, I have no problems. Westboro Baptist Church, I think, is an unhealthy community. Yeah. Like,
no, there's, for sure.
And that's me saying, I think, I'm not like slandering them. I'm not trying to say like they're X, Y. I'm just saying like, look, from where I stand, they are harming others. Yeah. And I think there are ways in which our own churches in Adventism is definitely unhealthy. I think there are things we do. I think the way that we talk about like LGBTQ issues, I think the way we talk about single people, I think the way we talk about Sabbath, I think the way we talk about a lot of things in many ways, not all the time.
I think the way we talk about other communities a lot of times.
Yeah.
You know, people who aren't in our Adventist group. I mean, like for years we got away with, and I hate to say it, but like Catholic bashing, where we like, and I have issues with the papacy and the leadership, but like I have no issues with Catholic people other than like individuals. But like for a long time, people would really bash on that and to a degree still do. And it's like, dude, that's kind of not cool. Like,
yeah, I agree. I would agree with that. I think too, we've said it was the papacy. Well, and I think, oh no, Ross and Care is another podcast that actually they attended an evangelistic series with David Stewart and Amazing Facts. Mm-hmm. And when it came down to identifying the Antichrist as the papacy, they were like, okay, so how far up does that, or how far down does that conspiracy reach? Because you can say you don't have a problem with Catholics, but then where, and that's where we've done a poor job of actually what the Antichrist is. Yeah. Because they're, it's not a person necessarily. And like, it may be fulfilled through a person at some point, but ultimately like it's more of an office and position of power more than it is like who holds
concept,
it.
Yeah.
Nor do I think it's a conspiracy that someone's in on. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know that there's someone sitting in the back.
Well,
I mean,
there's
maybe
some
there
people
is at
who
some
do.
Point.
I don't, conspiracy theories, I don't give any weight to because they're theories. That's all they are. You can't prove them. And to me, so I'm like, whether or not there is some giant, Illuminati conspiracy, whatever, like, okay, well, there and then, okay, so they secretly affect my life. But if it's so secret that I can't see it working, they're not doing a very good job. Like, they're not actively like 1984-ing this out here. The other part of a community that I think is very huge is this pride, this sense of, and like your definition of it, and overly inflated sense of self and over a sense of importance of self.
So ethnocentrism.
Yeah.
Or as we titled in a previous episode, Adventist exceptionalism, if you're talking about
Adventism.
Yeah,
like I think that's, I think that's definitely, but any community does, like you have a ton of communities that do that. Like, it's not just
but white people have done it for all of human history. Yay.
to a degree. Yes. Yeah, you can see, definitely yeah. see the Nazis and other things like that. But even in smaller, I mean, just this thing about like even smaller communities, when you look at like a city and you have one suburb in the city that like is very prideful and isn't helpful. Like all they want to do is kind of keep it all within that section. And so it's, you get a lot of gentrification, you get a lot of, you know, exclusion and like an overinflated sense of self. Like I am not only the best, I am the only one that matters. Like that's not a healthy community either.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the thing about these all can exist in a vacuum as far as like each one independently can exist. And these are identifiers. These are not like all of these have to happen and be happening simultaneously for you to be an unhealthy community. I think if you're doing any of these, then that is marking some way you're unhealthy. I could run every day, but only eat cake. I'm being unhealthy in one area of my life, even though I'm being healthy in another. And so I think it's not just like, oh, this is an unhealthy community, but there are parts of our lives and parts of our communities that are unhealthy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So now let's go to the flip
side. And like
I said,
having this doesn't make you an unhealthy community. Unhealthy communities have this.
Yeah. So let's jump into this then. Okay. What's a healthy community?
Healthy community, I think, is one.
I disagree.
is one that is not only improves the lives of those who are within it, but improves the lives of the people tangentially connected around it.
Yeah, that it reaches. Yeah.
One that is able to not only help people, members in it, but also help those who are not. And that, I think, is the biggest marker of a healthy community. When you see one that is like wow.
It's seeking the good of those in it and those around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, there are some sports communities and teams, like I think that it's so weird. Like, so Johnny Swim, the band Johnny Swim, has a song called Drunks. They're like, I want to write a song that the drunks all sing. And that's like the opening line of the song. And they wrote it because they were inspired to write it after they were watching, I think, a soccer game in a bar. And everyone was pitted against each other. And then because like, you know, one half of the bar was watching one team, the other half was watching another. And as soon as the game ended, all of a sudden everyone erupts in like common songs that came up on the bar. And all of a sudden the team divisions turned into united in the sport. And I think when that becomes unhealthy is when someone is unable to do that. You're unable to look beyond that. Like just 2 weeks ago, I drove from, I'm a Chelsea fan. 2 weeks ago, I drove from Charlotte to Chattanooga, 6 hours one way, and back to pick up a friend to watch a Liverpool game. And I'm a Chelsea fan. Like that's not something that like. So I think when you can remember the greater purpose that you're a part of and the greater community that you're a part of, then it becomes something healthy. But when you refuse to acknowledge what actually a healthy community focuses on what connects them, not what divides them. It focuses on what bridges are built between them and what unites them and not what divides them. And this honestly for me, as far as within Adventism, has been kind of the biggest marker of a lack of health, is that for the last decade at least, we've been focusing on a lot of things that divide us, whether it's health, the way we keep Sabbath, whether it's women's ordination, whether we've been focusing on these things that divide us. And there have been many times where people are unwilling to work with the other side of these debates because we've forgotten the bigger overarching thing, Jesus, God, that actually unites us. And I'm not saying that we just forget those other things, because when those other things are being discussed and are on the table, like some of those things are a necessity to discuss. I think women's ordination is one of them. I think the only way it gets better is if we discuss it and work through it and figure it out. But to actively hate and forget where we come from and forget the thing that unites us is the problem.
Well, the common joke that I've heard from a few, I listen to a lot of stand-up comedy, so a lot of, anyway, point being, you know, I've heard from a few stand-up comics is like the only way we're going to beat racism is when the aliens invade and everyone gets together and hates them. Because, yeah, okay, you might be an Arab and an Islam, but at least we're not like those, you know, eight-armed suckers. Like, let's get them. Like, that's,
yeah,
you know, like, that's the only way we're going to beat hate on Earth is to hate on another planet. And that's kind of the truth. Like, it was interesting. I was watching this movie Bright, and it wasn't very good. It's on Netflix.
That's the Will Smith one, right?
And Joel Edgerton's in it.
That was like all the social justice stuff was like super obvious and not subtle at all.
Yeah. And what was interesting about it, though, is at one point there are ogres, which are actually, I think they're actually called orcs. Yeah, they are. They're orcs. So, which is just fascinating to me that they would call it that. Lord of the Rings is just permeated. Anyway.
Everywhere.
So the orc communities, and this is in LA, and one of the orc leaders was like, I grew up in Florida, and there are great orc communities there. And like, not like, we used to throw barbecues and everyone would come in, like different people from all like the, you know, the elves and the humans, and like everyone would come in. And over here, it's so divided and we have to watch out for each other and we have to stick together. And I thought that was so interesting because the comment on it was so huge that the mark of a healthy community was that when one race or, you know, through a barbecue, all the other races came and, you know, this wasn't just our thing. This was quote unquote our thing. Like it was bigger than just us. Like everyone would come to it. That marks a healthy community. And it was so significant to me because I go, yeah, like when you can see past the differences to connect, that's when it becomes like a healthy community. And that's the reality, is like a healthy church and a healthy church community is one that not only is helpful to those that are in it, which I think we need to help a lot. That's step number one, because if you're not even healthy, like, you know what I mean? Like, no one's going to want to join, you know, no one's going to want to step into a room that's filled with poisonous plants.
Yeah.
So you got to get rid of those first. But then when you're able to not only reach, but then to like reach out and not in a ulterior motives way, like in a just, we're going to improve the lives of everyone around us because we have been so, you know, we have bountiful blessings. And that's the other thing is like they tie in from a sociological standpoint, whenever there's a lack of food, it's interesting because people get super tribal. And when there is a lack, you will see the true health of a community because, and this was interesting when Hurricane Iniki hit Kauai, I lived on Kauai for a year. When Hurricane Iniki hit, it was horrible. It was in, I think, 94. And this is interestingly, what if you go to Kauai now, there are like wild roosters all over the place. It's from that hurricane because like it knocked over a bunch of chicken coops and like the chickens just went out and became wild. So now it's kind of known for having these wild chickens everywhere. Not the point. Point is, when that hurricane hit, it was significant because people in the neighborhood, like they would throw huge barbecues in the street because there was no power. So all the food was going to go bad. And what's interesting is the people in the community that hoarded their food instead of sharing to the communities and becoming like supporting each other ended up becoming so ostracized from it, they had to leave and move away. Because people remembered the fact that when we all came together, instead of helping everyone else, you only cared about yourself. And they remembered that even when the quote unquote good times came back, that, okay, so you only care about you. Well, then you're not a part of our community. And that's a healthy community. A healthy community is one that even when the bad times come, still comes together rather than pulls away. And that was interesting to me to watch from a sociological standpoint, because that is so true throughout history. Whenever there's a famine or something like that, a community that can not only help itself, but then help other people is a healthy community. Ones that pull apart and are like, there's only enough for us. We're going to care about us first. Those are the ones that become unhealthy and usually end up becoming ostracized and end up going away.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would add, I think too, healthy communities have a lack of fear and they have a lot of transparency.
Yeah.
So members of the community are free to speak their mind, and there are ways to
you
do
feel
it
safe.
Safely and you healthily. Feel safe. Yeah. And you're not afraid. Like, there's the authority structure isn't such that you're going to be removed for speaking your mind. Like, to be honest, I've been a little afraid on this podcast. I have, but some of that has been self-imposed, in that we're in a denomination where I'm a pastor, I'm an employee of the denomination, but we can openly speak about the things that are going on in this community. And I think that's one of the things that actually makes us healthy, is the fact that members and pastors can talk about some of this stuff and,
yeah.
And be yeah. okay. Like, I've not been fired.
I mean, you want to have discretion, obviously.
Yeah, but, absolutely. Yeah. And there are some things, like, it's not okay to talk about because it's a professional environment too. And there are certain restrictions in a professional environment that, you know, don't bite the hand that feeds. But in general, it is a marker of a healthy community that we can even have these conversations and talk about things that bother us and things that we see as that are issues. That's absolutely true.
It's interesting because my dad cares very much about my reputation. He's seen a lot of people go through it. I really don't care about my reputation. But it's interesting to me because I come from a generation of transparency. He comes from a generation of not transparency. Like, so you can't, like, he would hate my Twitter account. Like, that's just the reality. It's like, if I ever get fired, it's going to be because somebody, you know, got on my Twitter. And it's like, yeah, I'm very open and transparent. Like, I'm very much myself on there. But if someone were to call me on that, I'd be like, look, this is who I am. If you want to come to me from a pastoral standpoint, I will talk to you as a pastor. But, you know, being a pastor, if I lose my job because of I am being transparent with who I am and what's real in my life, then I'm okay with that. And that's not a job that, to me, was healthy. And obviously I want to be able to do as much ministry as I can, but not at the cost of changing who I am. And that's the difference. Is he grew up in a very Hispanic conservative environment where, like, your reputation was, you know, huge. And I'm not saying it's not either. Like, you have to be very careful in this day and age, especially because, you know, we want to be able to combat sexual assault, and the Me Too movement is so important. So you have to be very, not just in a sexual, but in any aspect of your reputation, you know, do things, create a sense where people understand that you are responsible, that you're going to do smart things. But at the same time, it's like Jesus would get fired today. Like, Jesus would get fired today because of the people that he hung out with. Like, he would.
Well, and the things he said to religious leadership.
Yeah. Like, he could not be an Adventist pastor in the environment that we have right now. And it's like, we need to change our environment to the point where we can be like that, because I can't do the same things he did. Like, as a pastor, I can't go to the red light district and spend time in people's houses that are disreputable. I can't do that.
Yeah. Well, and we've got an issue too with, like, I'm single, so.
So was Jesus. Just pointing out. Jesus was a single guy. Hashtag singles ministry.
Okay, but what I'm saying is that because of the way our community currently operates, and because of idiot guys who take advantage of women, now we're seeing women put in a position where, like, the Billy Graham rule, right? It exists. So if you don't know what the Billy Graham rule, it's basically that a male is never alone with a female in any sort of situation, right? Like, there's always one other party involved or present. And the Billy Graham rule, what it's resulted in is basically this fear of women because men can't control themselves, or this fear of women because they fear what the women will do. Like, I tend to keep the Billy Graham rule because I'm actually afraid of false accusations.
Yeah, same here.
Which have happened. So it's like, that is something that does, you know, worry me. But the problem is that because we live in a community where that exists, where the need for that exists, what ends up happening is now women don't have the equal seat at the table that they should. Because a guy can walk into my office or into my apartment and talk to me about whatever thing they want to talk to me about. And it can be as serious as it needs to be. I can go meet with a male elder who I'm having problems with and confront them on it. But if I want to meet with a woman elder, it has to be somewhere public when someone can overhear, or there has to be a third party involved that now has to know what I'm talking about, even if it's something private between me and that person. And that's really frustrating. Like, women don't get an equal seat at the table because of the perversion of men who've abused their position of power and because of people who have this inflated sense of what your boundary should be as a pastor, and so, or as, you know, someone in any sort of position of authority. And so they say, you can't do this. Yeah. And that's a problem.
And the reality is, like, yeah, you don't want to put yourself in a bad position. But like, if I have a friend, you know, and I'm not a single pastor, and I have a friend who's driving through that wants to crash at my place and just crash on a couch. If it's a guy, I can totally do that. I can be like, yeah, dude, crash my couch. I don't care. Like, I have space. If that's a girl, I have to really think about it. And I can't be open about it if it does happen because, ooh, this is bad. And I'm like, why? I mean, obviously, yeah, it's oh, and there's temptation. There's temptation, and that's all true. But let's be real, it's 2018. Not every guy that's going to come crashing through is straight.
Well, that's why, yeah. Like, well, that's why I hate the verse. I forget exactly where it is, but avoid the appearance of all evil, and the actual
application.
The actual translation is the word appearance isn't really there. It's a different word. And so we've taken it to mean like avoid even that someone could determine that you're doing evil. But Jesus never did that. In fact, scripture is full of examples where the Bible heroes did things that were good that others perceived as evil. And so if we're supposed to avoid the appearance of evil, well, not even Jesus did that. And so Jesus fails his own metric for sinlessness.
And going back to that idea of a healthy community, I want to get to the point where our churches are such a healthy community that I can say that and there will be this implicit trust, not because of the fact that, oh, well, he's such a holy person, because pastors are just as human too, but rather that I can come forward and say, look, hey, this happened. Like, there's such a trust and safety in that community that I can be like, yeah, no, I'm doing this. You know, someone want to come and stay so that there's two of us, or if, you know, and I've actually had to do that where someone wants to come and crash and it's a girlfriend. And I'm like, hey, I can recommend you to a family. And so they stayed with like a family, that kind of a thing. But like, I want to have such a safety where it's like, even if something did happen, I can walk in and have a safety in being that transparent. There was an elder, and he was like Gandalf, dude. Like, this dude was so smart. His name was Martin Arthur, and Uncle Martin. He was in Hawaii. And this dude was like Gandalf. I'm not kidding. He had a radio voice, so like super deep and melodic and. And it was just crazy. This dude has so much wisdom. He once said a phrase that to me will always stick with me. And it was much more ideological. It wasn't practical. But he said, I long for the day when there are no more silent prayer requests. And obviously there's some things that, again, you don't want to air your dirty laundry. Like, but he was saying, I long for the day when church is such a place of safety. And we are so transparent. And we are so trusting of each other. And we are so not judgmental. That we can completely take off our masks and we can just say whatever is going on in our life, whatever our struggles are, whatever, we don't need to have a silent prayer request where it's like, well, I can't reveal that because somebody would take that the wrong way. It's like, no, where it's like, this is the place where I can absolutely unload and unburden. And that's what church should be. And to me, I go, that's why so many of our churches aren't healthy. That's why so many of our churches experience trouble with growth. And we try to we talk about the fact that it's not programs, right? Like, and this is what's interesting to me. Like, we talk about the fact, like, oh, well, it's not programs. And then we try to fix the fact that it's not programs with more programs instead of saying, okay, so it's like, no, it's just better evangelist programs or it's better church planting programs. Or it's, instead of saying, no, it's because we're not being 100% transparent. It's because we're not a safe community. It's because we're not a healthy community. When you become a healthy community, then those types of things can open up. And it isn't a program. It's about being a healthy community. But sometimes those programs are indicative of whether your community is healthy or not.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this is kind of one of the things I think that pastors shouldn't be a paid position. And I say that as someone who's being paid to be a pastor, like, because the fact is when your livelihood depends on your, you know, ability to stay sinless, you know what I mean? Like your ability to not make those mistakes, then you lose it. And what you become encouraged to do is hide it. And hide sins and not be transparent because you know you're going to lose your job. And if you've got a family to support, rent to pay, mortgage to pay, bills to pay, you know, yourself to take care of, health insurance, all this other stuff, like you become afraid to tell the truth. And this is why I do love the house church model. This is why I love that, like, the tent maker idea, because then your job and your pay isn't based on, you know, that fear doesn't play a factor as much anymore. It does play a factor in that you don't want to lose the community you're a part of, but the pressure's off to be this perfect person everyone expects you to be. And I think that's part of what makes us unhealthy is that there is that kind of thing on the pastor, and I'm not entirely sure how to get rid of it. Like that perception of what a pastor should be. But in general, you shouldn't, this is my thing. You shouldn't be in a position where you lose your livelihood because of that kind of personal mistake. And yet we've created with pastors being a full-time job, we've created that kind of system. And that's what worries me. And I'm not saying that you should be just allowed to make mistakes and do whatever you want with no repercussions. That's not what I'm saying. And I do think there are some things that if you do, you shouldn't be a leader anymore. So why are we making the leadership based on those moral things where if you fail because you're human, then you lose it and you lose the ability to take care of yourself and take care of others.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. How do we fix that? I think we just start being more transparent. I mean, it's about culture. We have to change the culture of the church and perception of all that. But again, I go back to if we build healthy communities, we can start to do that. And culture community, it's kind of, they're not interchangeable, but they're very similar. Yeah. The culture of a community is tied in with that community. And a community can be tied to a culture. Most communities aren't. Most communities are tied to a place or an interest. But some can be tied to cultures and memes and things like that. For Adventist churches, you can have a community change its culture. They are not tied to – they're tied to a set of beliefs, but not to a culture. So you can go from a very works-dominated, perfectionist – unsafe culture to one of safety. You can do that. And what's cool to me is you see guys like David Ashrick and Ty Gibson and some of these guys. James Rafferty's still on the fence for me. I think he's a cool dude, but I think to me he hasn't quite gone over as much as some of the others. But you see them where they used to be very works dominated. They used to be very unhealthy in their perceptions, and then they completely changed that culture. Lightbearers Ministry and everything, it really flipped around, and it's awesome to see that because they didn't stop being quote unquote conservative. They're still very conservative theologically, but they became much healthier as people and able to acknowledge certain things. And I think that's awesome. And I think that's what we need to do to build up in our communities. So that our churches can become healthy. Because here's the thing, man. Like I said before, God's not going to send people into a room full of, like a church full of poisonous plants, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that nobody sends. I was involved in a church that was a toxic environment, man. It was just toxic. And we actually got in trouble with the conference and the evangelism director because we hadn't had evangelistic growth in 2 years. And I wanted to smack this dude and be like, yeah, because people are dying. Like, I'm not going to do an evangelistic series right now because people are dying inside. I'm not going to do that. Like,
I'm not going to invite people into a community that doesn't know how to be a community.
And this is the thing that we need to change as far as our perception. Like, I love evangelists. I have a great love for them. I understand that their ministry is important. But I have beef. The majority of people in our church that I have beef with are evangelists for several reasons. Number one, they have an overinflated sense of self and what it means to actually be an evangelist. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, not all of them, not the majority of them, but there are a significant amount that are very like, my way, this is my way. And they will quote Ellen White to prove that, which to me is like she wouldn't quote herself. Anyway, point being, a lot of times these people don't understand that a healthy community is the most vital part and they want to grow. And some of them get it. Like some of them understand it. And they're like the foundation of evangelism is a healthy community. Guys like, he's a British dude. He used to be down in Florida. Short little awesome guy. He did the Ekbalo prayer. Anyway, doesn't matter. But guys like that, like they talk about like how important it is to have a healthy community, and that's the basis, the springboard for good evangelism. But like this particular evangelism director for the conference, man, he just didn't get it. Like he was just like, no, you need to be growing all the time, all the time. It's like, no, if you don't have a healthy community, man, an unhealthy community is going to do way more damage to not only itself, but to the surrounding area. And by extension, you know, you can poison that well in that area for decades. When I was in Hawaii, man, one of the churches there, I won't say which one, you know who you are, people who listen. That I have no idea if they listen or not, but that's one of those one of those churches, man. When I got there, I tried to do stuff with the communities on the island, and literally I was told, Adventists have a really bad reputation on this island because of this church. By other people, not the Adventists, other people on the island were like, oh yeah, no, this group like is really bad. Like, we don't really do stuff with them because of this. And I was like, oh man, like they don't even realize the effect they've had. And in their minds, they were a super healthy community because, oh yeah, well, we're doing all the Adventist-y stuff and we meet every week and it's like, you don't realize how unhealthy you are because you've poisoned this well. Like,
yeah,
you could have the best evangelist in the world. Jesus could come and try to help and it's not going to work because you've poisoned the well so bad. And I think that's the issue. You know, the Jewish community in Jerusalem around the time of Christ was not a healthy community. Why? Because Jesus himself came to that community and they killed him for it. And that's another good litmus test for me is for churches. If Jesus showed up and started doing his ministry the way he did it then in your community now, would he be accepted and encouraged and followed or not?
Yeah.
That's a good litmus test.
I agree. And I think, you know, I've really, in the last 2 years of pastoring small churches, my idea for a metric of what makes a church successful has radically changed. Yeah. And, you know, in college, I used to be the guy that would say, like, if a church isn't growing, shut it down, like, cut it off. And then I'm like, well, hold up.
Yeah.
let's flip this script a little bit here, because I agree that growth is a sign of a healthy community, that other people want to be a part of it. But, like, healthy communities to me are really those that make the area around them better. Are they meeting the needs of the people around them, and for a church specifically? And so for me, is a church involved in the community? Are they making a difference? Are they making lives better? Because if they are, then why does it matter? Like, why does it matter that they're baptizing 10 or 15 or 36 people per year? Like, if we shut those down, all we're doing is abandoning the Adventists in those towns and saying, well, you didn't do good enough as a community, so that's that. And I'm against that model. Yeah. And I understand that growth is a sign of health. Don't get me wrong. And there is some growth that naturally happens as a result of it. But my idea of what makes a healthy community and a healthy church has radically changed as a result of being in communities where my members are physically unable to do a whole lot other than attend church.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that is that, like, the ultimate metric for a healthy church is one that can plant another church. To me, that's like, you have to be in order to do that, you have to be in a healthy place. Like, you have to be in a good place to be able to do that. But that isn't the only thing you can do to prove you're a healthy church. Like, a healthy church, spreading the Adventist message is so much more than planting churches and baptizing people. It's getting people ready for Jesus' second coming. If you can do that without necessarily having them join the Adventist church, okay, well, then you're succeeding. Like, you know what I mean? Like, especially when you consider, like, what we believe about the end times, that, at some point there's going to be a line drawn in the sand and people are going to choose, hey, are we going to follow God or are we going to follow, are we going to follow this other, you know, path? And we've done a good job of setting the Adventist church up so that people see us and they say, I knew Adventists. Best way I can say this, I was involved when I was younger, when I was growing up, I was in a homeschool community and It was a bunch of different Christians. It was a Christian homeschool community, but it was all denominations, a bunch of different people. Majority of them came from a few denominational churches in the area, but there really was, like, we had the full spectrum. And we were the only Adventists there. And what's interesting is there were these two extremely good-looking sisters that went to this co-op, right? To the point of, like model gorgeous, okay? And super spiritual, just amazing. And so I was trying to hang out with them and spend time with them because I was this, you know, 16-year-old boy. And their dad was, of course, very protective, big dude. And one time they invited me to go to a church function on Sunday. So I was like, cool, yeah. So I went. And afterwards, they all went to, like, Jason's Deli or something nearby. And so we're sitting down. The dad kind of finally begrudgingly talked to me, like, oh, well, what do you think about this? Like, who are you? Blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, what did you say you were again? And I was like, oh, I'm Seventh-day Adventist. And he turns and looked at me real quick and goes, do you have people in Michigan? And immediately I was
Oh, no.
I was like, yes, we have a large. For those of you who don't know, the Michigan Conference has a reputation of being very conservative and very anti-not Adventist. So anyone who's not Adventist is kind of viewed as Babylon. So I was panicking. I'm like, oh, no. And so I was like, yeah. And he goes, I grew up just outside of Battle Creek. And I'm like, oh, great. Which is one of the most conservative communities. And he goes, I used to go to this place. And they were always friendly and they had amazing bread. And he goes, they're good people. And his whole tone of how he responded to me changed.
Wow.
Because how this community treated him. And I go, that guy is going to hear, if he lives to when Jesus comes again and that line is drawn in the sand and the followers of God are on one side and the other, he's going to see us and say, I know Seventh-day Adventists. I remember them. Those are good people. That's the memory that's going to last in his head. And I go, that's the ultimate benchmark. The ultimate metric of a healthy community is being able to plant another church, but the benchmark is, are you leaving a better impression? And obviously not every time you can do that. We all have bad mistakes, but on a consistent basis, are people walking in and having a positive interaction with you? Are they walking away thinking these are good people? Even if they don't join our movement, are they walking away with that? Because if they're walking away with that, and then, you know, they're one step closer to being ready for Jesus coming. And I go, that's success. For me, that's success. That's a healthy community.
Well, and So let's kind of end on this. We'll go a little over, but that's fine. I, you know, moving from unhealthy to healthy, there's a cost, I think.
Yeah.
There's a big
sacred
cost.
Cows.
I think. So last week I talked about preaching my first sermon that made someone walk out and, you know, stand up in protest and walk out. And that sermon is intentionally designed. The sermon's called Fluid Discipleship, and it's intentionally designed to confront people's rigidity. The idea that, you know, you're so rigid in your beliefs that you end up perpetuating the suffering of others, and you can be so convinced that you're right, you actually end up standing against Jesus. Think about any time that he healed someone on the Sabbath and the synagogue leaders opposed him for it and thought that what he was doing was sin. You can be so convinced that something is sin, you stand against Jesus as a result. So that sermon is specifically designed to make people confront their rigidity and either decide to double down or decide to walk away from it. That's what it's designed to do. And I've preached three different times at all three of my churches, or both of my churches, and then once the guest speaker. At my first church, with someone, it actually confirmed to them that, hey, their rigidity. And I made the point that 100% of churches that have rigid disciples, the second those rigid disciples either change or leave, the church becomes healthy and grows. And that person said... But he said, hey, look, I've already been thinking about going back to my old home church to carry on a legacy, but of a family member who recently died. But also, you know, I realized that, yeah, I think some of the ways that I'm rigid really don't mesh here. And I think I need to, I think that confirmed it for me. And I said, okay, great. Your faith is fine. You're going to where you believe that you fit in, and that no big deal. My other church, it convinced a guy who was 82 years old, who had worn a tie his entire life to church and in everything everywhere. He started taking off his tie for the first time in his life when he came.
Yes.
As a result. And that's like,
that's huge.
That sounds dumb, but that's huge. He came to me. This is an 82-year-old dude who came to me the next week and's like, Pastor, look, I'm not wearing a tie. Can you believe it? Like, And now he's not wearing a tie to church on a regular basis. And that's huge for him. And then at my guest speaker church, it made someone say walk out because they could not accept that some things could be fluid. Some things could be flexible in the way we do things. And so, you know, there is a cost, and the cost is this. There is no growth without attrition. There is no growth without attrition. And I think there will be, to get rid of or to make a community healthy, you either have to make those who are unhealthy healthy, or they will walk away.
You're gonna shed
and
the
usually
excess
weight, what happens, you have to show them where the exit is. And usually they'll walk out on their own. You rarely have to actually get rid of them unless it's someone who's in leadership.
You know, it's interesting. And, the churches that I grew up in, and I'm loath to do, you know, I was so rigid in my own beliefs back then. Because as a kid, man, I was a teenager in this church. Like, you're just getting out of the concrete stage where everything is or is not. And I think that's also the benchmark for a mature church, is one that loses its rigidity. You know, this church where I was at, they had a core group. And what's interesting is as it grew, and as the culture and as the community and as the face of the church grew, there were a number of different factors of why it was unhealthy, but there were some unhealthy members in that church. And I hate to say it, but when they walked out, it became a healthier community. I mean, it's still not where it could have been and should have been. It had a lack of good leadership for a long time. But what's interesting to me is that, you could immediately sense the health of the church when these people left. And what's interesting is a lot of these people went to different churches, and those churches started, you could like see trouble when they like, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, I kind of feel bad. And I, you know, I'm not going to name names or anything like that, because that's not my place. But, you know, my goal is always to help people grow. And sometimes you have to let people grow by letting them go. And I've been involved in another church where that happened too, where, you know, and I was, you know, talking to this to some of the church leadership, you know, when you start exercising, it's painful. As you continue exercising, you are going to lose, you're going to shed excess weight. And yes, you are going to look smaller. But in reality, as you continue to work out and grow, muscle weighs more than fat. So you are going to get growth, and it's going to be significant growth, and it's going to be stronger growth. But it is going to take, you are going to lose at first. At first, you are going to lose and shed. But, you know, that's okay.
Well, and I think, too, the other half of that is if you're the person that's leading through that change, or if you're one of the people that is trying to make things healthy, you are going to be criticized and attacked. Yeah. Absolutely. Like, it's going to take it out of you. They say that I was interviewing another pastor recently for the other podcast that I do, and he made the point that they say that you should only, like, completely transform one church in your career if you're a pastor. Like, you should only completely revitalize one church. Because of how much it takes out of you.
I think it depends on the pastor, but yeah, it's stressful.
Yeah, no, it's just like, especially if it's a big church. And he's someone who, if you heard his name and you heard his story, would be like, oh, I can see exactly why he's saying that. But it really, like, when I say count the cost of creating a healthy community, especially from unhealthy, from, like, you know, moving from a state of unhealthy to healthy, it's gonna cost. And I think we need to understand that walking into it, and understand that it's definitely worth the cost, but it's scary. It is frightening. And that's because it's an unhealthy community at first. It fills you with that fear, and that fear will prevent you from changing what you need to change if you let that fear control it and control you.
No, for sure. And this is not us talking, by the way. There is biblical... Paul straight up says in like three or four of his epistles, like this, like he names people, bro. Like, Paul goes farther than I would. He names specific people and is like, you need to let this person go because they're causing trouble. So he does that, but then he also encourages me. He's like, if this person is causing, one of the biggest controversies we have in our church is this idea of disfellowship, because we don't understand the purpose of disfellowship. Like, disfellowship isn't there to make the church healthier. Yes, but it's also there to keep the church from becoming toxic. Like, it isn't to remove sin from your church. It's to remove toxicity from your church. Some of the people who should be disfellowshipped are elders who've never, quote unquote, done a bad sin, but they are extremely toxic to the environment. I mean, I've heard of stories back in the day when elders or pastors would stop people and give them, like, in the middle of a sermon, walk down the aisle and hand someone stuff and be like, take that makeup off your face.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about that from a healthy community standpoint, that is horrific. But the community at the time was based on being, quote unquote, holier. And so they were like, yeah, thank you. I'm glad somebody said it. We're removing this toxic thing from our environment. And it's like, no. That's not health. That's not success. And that's the type of thing that we need to improve. And that's the thing we need to build on, is this idea of Paul saying, you need to make a healthy community. You need to remove toxic elements. For some people, yeah, it's because they're doing deliberate sin. Some people, it's a deliberate sin. Like, at one point, he talks about that this guy is either, like, marrying a relative, or he's, like, you know, in a relationship with his stepmother or something like that. And he's like, look, this is a bad thing. Like, you need to get rid of this because this is how it's going to happen. But in other environments, he's like, this person's just causing trouble. Like, they're just causing trouble. It's not a sin. It's not a, but he goes, do you understand how this is not good for the church? This may not necessarily keep them out of heaven, but they need to be not part of that community because they are making this community less healthy. And I think that's significant for us to understand. Like, when we transfer from an unhealthy community to becoming a healthy community, you are going to have to drop those toxic elements. They are either going to have to adjust and change themselves and adapt, or be let go. And that's part of it. And I, you know, that's part of becoming a healthy community. I mean, it sounds horrible, but the apostles would not have done what they needed to do if Judas hadn't been removed from their group. And to be honest, if he hadn't removed himself, I think Jesus probably would have been like, oh, this is awesome. Hey, Judas, I need you to sit this one out because you're not gonna do this. And Paul was ostracized for a lot of his views. Like, you know, he wasn't popular with the Jewish community because he calls Peter out and is like, dude, you need to stop showing favoritism. And they did not like him. They did not support him because of that Christian Jewish community, you know? So there are going to be people in your church that are going to, they're going to make your life difficult when you do this type of thing. They're going to walk out. They're going to have this. One of my elders, the only time that I legit felt attacked for what my ministry, one of my elders came up, and one of the ones who supported me and was like, you don't need, you know, you're doing this thing and we can't do that. And I backed off like, whoa, hey, like, what's the deal? Like, relax. But at the end, I realized, okay, yeah, this is a toxic dude. You need to not, and I confronted him on it, and he did not like that. But I had to do it because I'm like, this is not healthy. If you continue this, if you treat other people like the way you treated me, understand this is not what a healthy community does.
Yeah, I agree. There is a cost to it, and I think it's worth it, and I think it is biblical. But we hope that, you know, this episode has really kind of shown maybe some areas where you might be healthy or unhealthy and some things that you might be able to do. Maybe we've given you some ideas. I don't know. Whatever it is, we wanted to talk about this because this is something that's on our hearts.
Yes.
So, and I think it's an important topic. And obviously we could keep going, but we're over time.
Over time.
We want to just say thank you guys for listening. If you want to subscribe to Absurdity, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or any podcatching app. And if you've subscribed to us on iTunes, please leave a review. That really helps us out. If you have any feedback, comments, questions, concerns, anything like that, suggestions, email me, ryan180becker@gmail.com, or you can find myself and Tony on Twitter. I am at ryan180becker, and Tony is?
Tony_Anobile, A-N-O-B-I-L-E, or just look up The New Dr. Jones.
There you go. So thank you guys so much for listening. If you want to support us financially, you can go to patreon.com/absurditypodcast. Every dollar helps and helps us make improvements to this show and keep the lights on in here. And so we thank you guys so much for listening, for supporting this show, and we'll see you next week.